I've heard about this baby boy who's come to earth to bring us joy, and I just wanna sing this song to you. It goes like this: the fourth, the fifth, the minor fall, the major lift. With every breath I'm singing hallelujah, 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 hallelujah. Came to Bethlehem expecting child, they searched the inn to find a place, for you were coming soon, and there was no room for them to stay. So in a manger filled with hay, God's only son was born.
Left their flocks by night to see this baby wrapped in light. A host of angels led them all to you. It was just as the angel said, you'll find him in a manger bed. Emmanuel, Savior, hallelujah. Hallelujah, 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 hallelujah. A star shone bright up in the east. To Bethlehem, the wise men three came many miles and journey long for you. And to the place at which you were, there frankincense and gold and myrrh they gave to you and cried out, hallelujah, hallelujah. Thank you.
Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly call. Today is Monday, December 18th, 2023. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Time. If you're listening live over a radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on a weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, it's plural, questions@nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of the website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on the donation tab, top right side of our website. Okay, we're going to break away from our regular meeting. We're in Corinthians, 1 Corinthians, but today we're going to read out of Luke, second chapter of Luke, read by Alexander Scorby, the Christmas message.
Chapter 2. And it came to pass in those days that there went out a decree from Caesar Augustus that all the world should be taxed. And this taxing was first made when Cyrenius was governor of Syria. And all went to be taxed, every one into his own city. And Joseph also went up from Galilee out of the city of Nazareth into Judea unto the city of David, which is called Bethlehem, because he was of the house and lineage of David, to be taxed with Mary his espoused wife, being great with child. And so it was that while they were there, the days were accomplished that she should be delivered. And she brought forth her firstborn son, and wrapped him in swaddling clothes, and laid him in a manger, because there was no room for them in the inn. And there were in the same country shepherds abiding in the field, keeping watch over their flock by night. And lo, the angel of the Lord came upon them, and the glory of the Lord shone round about them, and they were sore afraid. And the angel said unto them, Fear not, for behold, I bring you good tidings of great joy, which shall be to all people. For unto you is born this day in the city of David a Saviour, which is Christ the Lord. And this shall be a sign unto you. Ye shall find the babe wrapped in swaddling clothes, lying in a manger. And suddenly there was with the angel a multitude of the heavenly host, praising God, and saying, Glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace, goodwill toward men. And it came to pass, as the angels were gone away from them into heaven, the shepherds said one to another, Let us now go even unto Bethlehem, and see this thing which is come to pass, which the Lord hath made known unto us. And they came with haste, and found Mary and Joseph, and the babe lying in a manger. And when they had seen it, they made known abroad the saying which was told them concerning this child. And all they that heard it wondered at those things which were told them by the shepherds. But Mary kept all these things, and pondered them in her heart. And the shepherds returned, glorifying and praising God for all the things that they had heard and seen, as it was told unto them. And when 8 days were accomplished for the circumcising of the child, his name was called Jesus, which was so named of the angel before he was conceived in the womb. And when the days of her purification according to the law of Moses were accomplished, they brought him to Jerusalem to present him to the Lord. As it is written in the law of the Lord, every male that openeth the womb shall be called holy to the Lord. And to offer a sacrifice, according to that which is said in the law of the Lord, a pair of turtle doves or 2 young pigeons. And behold, there was a man in Jerusalem whose name was Simeon. And the same man was just and devout, waiting for the consolation of Israel. And the Holy Ghost was upon him. And it was revealed unto him by the Holy Ghost that he should not see death before he had seen the Lord's Christ. And he came by the Spirit into the temple. And when the parents brought in the child Jesus to do for him after the custom of the law, then took he him up in his arms, and blessed God, and said, Lord, now lettest thou thy servant depart in peace, according to thy word. For mine eyes have seen thy salvation, which thou hast prepared before the face of all people, a light to lighten the Gentiles, and the glory of thy people Israel. And Joseph and his mother marveled at those things which were spoken of him. And Simeon blessed them, and said unto Mary his mother, Behold, this child is set for the fall and rising again of many in Israel, and for a sign which shall be spoken against. Yea, a sword shall pierce through thy own soul also, that the thoughts of many hearts may be revealed. And there was one Anna, a prophetess, the daughter of Phanuel of the tribe of Aser. She was of a great age, and had lived with an husband 7 years from her virginity, and she was a widow of about 84 years, which departed not from the temple, but served God with fastings and prayers night and day. And she, coming in that instant, gave thanks likewise unto the Lord, and spake of him to all them that looked for redemption in Jerusalem. And when they had performed all things according to the law of the Lord, they returned into Galilee to their own city Nazareth. And the child grew, and waxed strong in spirit, filled with wisdom, and the grace of God was upon him. Now his parents went to Jerusalem every year at the feast of the Passover. And when he was 12 years old, they went up to Jerusalem after the custom of the feast. And when they had fulfilled the days, as they returned, the child Jesus tarried behind in Jerusalem, and Joseph and his mother knew not of it. But they, supposing him to have been in the company, went a day's journey, and they sought him among their kinsfolk and acquaintance. And when they found him not, they turned back again to Jerusalem, seeking him. And it came to pass that after 3 days they found him in the temple, sitting in the midst of the doctors, both hearing them and asking them questions. And all that heard him were astonished at his understanding and answers. And when they saw him, they were amazed. And his mother said unto him, Son, why hast thou thus dealt with us? Behold, thy father and I have sought thee sorrowing. And he said unto them, How is it that ye sought me? Wist ye not that I must be about my father's business? And they understood not the saying which he spake unto them. And he went down with them, and came to Nazareth, and was subject unto them. But his mother kept all these sayings in her heart. And Jesus increased in wisdom and stature, and in favor with God and man.
Okay, I guess before we start, I just want to let everyone know that we won't be here, obviously, on Christmas or New Year's Day, both fall on Monday. So our next call will be on January 8th next year. Jan, do we have any questions or any other announcements that need to be made?
Yes, we have several questions tonight, John. The first question pertains to the Homestead Act. If you rent property but own the house on that property, are you able to file for the Homestead Act?
Well, if you own the house and you live in the house, you say you're going to live in the house, then you can file for the Homestead Act. If you don't live in the house and you're going to rent it out or whatever the case may be, you cannot get it. I believe also you can only do it on one residence, but I'm not too sure. Say you own two homes, one in different states or something. I don't know whether you can file for the Homestead Act on both. But I do know it is only applies to the house that you're going to live in.
Okay. If the banks fail, what happens to your money that is direct deposited monthly, such as Social Security?
Well, there is no if on that. It's a matter of when. Good question. Big problem. But it's a big problem for everyone. Look, at this whole thing is set up to destroy the people, to destroy America, to destroy our republic, to actually get rid of as many of us as they can. You know, something like this, it appears it's probably going to happen over the winter, which is the worst time it can happen. So who knows where this is going to go. People, I know I've been preparing for this for years. Still feel I'm not really prepared, but to some degree I guess I'm prepared more than most. As far as money in the bank, you know, maybe they'll give you a penny on the dollar. Who knows? Here's the big problem and here's the big secret. I never even thought about this. I don't recall anyone ever bringing this up to me. I come to the realization, and I forget where I heard this at, but ultimately the way the banks are set up, when you deposit money into that bank, you actually, and you're getting paid interest on it, they're actually loaning the bank your money. And that's the real truth about, you know, bank accounts. So your money is on loan, and they will use that money for many different things, I guess. I don't know what kind of investments or what they do or so on and so forth. But when they fail, well, you were their partner. Maybe you can recover a penny on the dollar. Now, the truth of the matter right now, since the dollar has, since gold has gone to over 2,000 an ounce, I don't know, I heard that last week or two. I don't know if it's been holding over 2,000. I presume it has. Nevertheless, it's about 2,000 an ounce. That means the dollar is actually worth one penny. So you're going to get 1/100th of a penny, okay? Now, there is another side to this coin, and that is the other side of devolution. There's trillions and trillions and trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars that are controlled by these people who have betrayed this country, enemies foreign and domestic. And all these major corporations, many corporations that are owned by other corporations that are owned by larger corporations and so on and so forth. Most of the, a lot of the business is owned by these people, the elite, if we may want to give them that name, the New World Order, the enemy, those who hate America. You know, so they control a lot of things. And of course, as Trump has said on a couple of occasions at least, you know, when you rob the diamond store and you get caught, you got to give the diamonds back. So when these people are, when we seize control of everything that they've got and bring them to justice, some of them at the end of a rope and others maybe a jail sentence, and of course it's the juries and the tribunals, the different tribunals, military tribunals too, going to make those decisions. But the bottom line is that that money needs to go back to the people. So in the long run, things will work out okay economically. I just heard Trump say, I just heard this today, I think. I heard Trump say that next Christmas is going to be a much better year than this year and a much better Christmas. People will have plenty of money and things are going to be great. We're going to be returning to normal, which is kind of a strange statement because he's going to win the election, no doubt in my mind. But he doesn't take office until January. Maybe what happens even after the election, maybe he'll take office right away because there is no presidency, so to speak. I've heard him make mention recently. I'm trying to think of the exact words he said. This is just a recent speech, I guess, he's given. And he made mention something about him still being the president. And I also heard when he was announced in another venue somewhere else that the person who... announced him to the microphone, mentioned that he was the 45th, the 46th, and the 47th president of the United States. Or was it the 46th, 47th, 48th? I forget which one it is. So anyway, a lot of strange things are going to, you know, is actually happening. Of course, a lot of it makes sense, I think, the way it will, it'll unfold. But again, as far as the banks are going, you'll get a bank holiday. They could be shut down for weeks, maybe longer. I don't know, maybe even days, but I don't think days. But they'll be shut down for a period of time. And when they open up, you'll find your accounts don't have much in it or a certain percentage. At least that's my understanding. Gerard, I don't know if you've looked into this. Maybe you can expound more on that or anyone else. But that's what I've heard. And again, we're casualties of war. We've been at war for a long time. Actually, we've been at war for over 200 years, 250 years. This war goes all the way back to 1776, and actually, it goes back to even further than that. It goes to 1750, actually, when we were colonies. So maybe we'll discuss that in a bit more detail of what that means and what that's all about. But anyway. Gerard, did you want to maybe respond, or Ed? I see you got your hand up. Did you want to respond to that?
Yes, I would like to suggest that people might want to get money out of banks and into credit unions. They have much more control over what goes on in credit unions, and they're not nearly so likely to lose everything.
Well, I'm in 100% agreement with that. I moved to a credit union some years back, and that's where anything I do is found. But I don't leave much money in the bank. I leave very, very little. So
you want to
take your money out. And the other thing is, this is something that might be interesting. Remember, coins are backed up a little different than the Federal Reserve note. Coins are actually U.S. printed. They didn't come from the Fed per se. And coins, well, it doesn't matter what's inside the coin. It follows whatever the market will give to a true dollar, a dollar at that time. So a dollar could be worth 2 cents. Well, that's what that coin's worth. If you have a half a dollar, then it's worth a penny. If the dollar, if you go back in time, it was worth 30 cents, well, then that's what a half a dollar would give you, would be 15 cents. So it follows it. They did take the silver out, and they did leave a little bit of silver for a time period. There's some 40% silver. Then there's other coins. I think they may put some, well, I think they put copper in a lot of things. I think it helps to solidify it, maybe. I'm not sure. But in any event, even if it's just a piece of steel, even if it's nothing, has no value, then it's still... again, follows what the rate of a dollar is. And it's applied to what is, what is the value or the ratio between silver and gold. And I'm talking about the real ratio. You have to go back to the turn of the century, go back to the beginning of the 20th century before they made us have all this monopoly money. But you go back then, gold was $20 an ounce. So 20 silver dollars equaled 1 ounce. And you can work the ratio off of that to discover where we're at. Think on how many coins it takes to make a silver dollar, okay, as far as its value that you're seeing. So silver is really very well low. It's worth a lot more than what they appear to have it. And they've been holding back that price because I heard, I think it was Gerard or somebody talking a while ago about silver is going to be a problem. It definitely is, because when silver shoots, and it may even overtake gold for a while, as crazy as that might sound. And so silver, if you've got to put money away to savings, buy silver. I was buying a lot of junk silver, which is, silver dollars and silver quarters and dimes and things of that nature. But now I just really collect a lot of just halves, half dollars. Some of them may have some silver in it, some of them may not, most of them don't, but they still have a value, they have a face value. It's a U.S. coin, it's got to be guaranteed. That stems all the way up from before we even became, the United States Inc. So anyway, I don't know if anybody wants to add.
Listen, I gotta say something. First of all, if you wait to buy silver till after it breaks out, you will not get it.
Mm-hmm.
The minute it breaks out over 25 or that thereabouts, they're not going to sell it to you when you come in, because they know it's going to go to the moon, and they need to know what their replacement cost is before they sell it to you. So they're going to close down the windows. You're not going to buy anything.
I'm wondering if I got a lot of silver. No, well, I haven't got a lot of silver, but, it's worth money. So, but I got silver, and I'm wondering if when that happens and it goes through the sky, how hard it would be for me to change my silver to gold, because that might be the way to go at that point if you have silver, because I think silver is going to shoot way beyond what it really should be.
I believe it's going to be worth more than gold because it's scarce. It's a metal that they use for everything. I mean, look at, they use it for colloidal silver. They used to use it for photographs, but they use it in almost every technology needs silver. And silver gets used up. 98% of all the gold that was ever mined is still around. Silver is not that way. We burned up like 37% of what we mined already. I mean, that's never going to be reclaimed. And the other thing I want to say is I've been listening.
It's burnt up a lot in the technology, isn't it?
Yeah, well, like anything that was used for silver plates, that went down the drain. You don't get that back. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And silver, a lot of the technology actually uses the silver up, you know. And right now, solar panels need silver, and they're pushing solar panels big time. And
can they reclaim it back?
I don't know if they can reclaim it back out of solar panels or not, you know, because if you subject it to too much heat for too long, it ends up becoming dross. In other words, if you burn it enough, it becomes worthless. It's not silver anymore. You know what I mean?
If there's a shortage because of finding it and recovering it, or there's actually a real shortage that we have a serious problem in the sense that
there's both. It's that they have not hit any major silver veins, you know, recently that they know is going to sustain the amount of silver that we need even for the use that it gets. And so it's going to become rarer than gold, and everybody's going to be wanting it, so there's just not going to be enough of it around. There already isn't enough right now. So it's just the writing's on the wall. It really is.
Right.
I think if you didn't get it and you don't go out tomorrow and get it, you may not get it at all, because it looks like it might pop this week, in my opinion.
People should be buying food. Your food's going to be hard to get to. There's going to be shortages of that, and also it's going to be very expensive. The fact that money is not going to be worth much, that makes it more expensive. So, I mean, look, I just recently went out and bought a quarter of a cow, and I really didn't need to do that at the moment. I could have waited another 3 months, but I did it anyway because I know things are about to happen.
Listen, if the groceries go off the shelf, guess what? That cow's worth more than silver for somebody who's starving.
I also bought a lot of rice because I can share rice, a lot of sugar, a lot of flour, a lot of rice.
Who was it that sold his birthright for a bowl of lentils?
Jacob and Esau. That's Esau.
Yeah, Jacob and Esau, right? That proves the point. And the other thing I wanted to say, as far as banks go, a general rule of thumb is you want to choose a bank that doesn't do business in more than three counties. If they're doing business in more than three counties, they're controlled by the upper banks, and they are not secure, and they are highly leveraged. You want to keep your local banks. They're better. They're not going to lose the stuff like the big net. The multinationals are the ones that are going to go down in this downturn. You're going to see them go down. We're in for a whole load of stuff here coming up.
They probably have a particular charter, their own charter that they've written up, which protects the people in some way. Well, definitely more than what these other banks have. We're talking credit unions now.
Well, they're always playing games. Now they do what they call bail-ins, and they take your money, and they say, when you put money in our bank, you become our partners, and any investments we make, you bear the risk. That has never been the case.
That's the thinking right now that they got going, so...
You know,
I suppose it's been that way for a long time and hidden from us.
Well, you know, when you look at history and you look around the world, when a few years back, 5-6 years ago or whatever, when Greece went down, that's when they invented the bail-in. They always try this stuff on a smaller nation. They always do a dry run, and they always telegraph what they're going to do is through media and movies. And they'll take a small nation state. I mean, Argentina is case in point. Argentina was a very rich and industrial nation that they took to their knees with communism. But all the stuff that they did there to Argentina and what they do to these other states and what they did to Greece with the bail-in, you know, I mean, we had bailouts in 2008. Now we have bail-ins where they actually steal your money. So, but they always try it first someplace to make sure it works. And they also want to gauge how the people will put up with it, because if they think the people are going to go in the streets, I mean, they want people in the streets right now. They can't get it, but at some point they'll want them in the streets because they need chaos to cover their tracks, and then they need to make things bad enough that you'll beg them to come in and take over. And Klaus Schwab and say, okay, go into the comps. You will own nothing and be happy. And that's what they're going for.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's get back to the questions. Appreciate it. Okay, Dan, what else we got?
The next question is about prosecutorial misconduct. How can we proceed with charging and or unseating judges who are committing prosecutorial misconduct, given that a database has been built in Ohio which appears to be collecting data. Should we, the people, get a handle on this database of information, how it should be used for the benefit of we, the people?
Well, that makes sense to do that, but as far as these judges are concerned, they're all guilty of subversion, at least on a federal level, and I think on a state level, too. And I hate to say all. It sounds pretty, kind of crazy on the one hand, but that's not true. Look at they have all moved on over to combining equity and law from both the federal and the state levels, called it civil law, and have done away with common law, done away with the rules of common law, created their own rules, set forth rules to be able to throw out anybody who comes in that is one of the people. I find myself constantly being thrown out of the court, and the federal court under Rule 12, and they're trying to do it right now. I'm in a state court right now with a case, and they're trying to do that there also. So they deny me. That's denial of due process. I have every right. I have a Seventh Amendment right. I have to be able to have a common law court, and all that operates under the rules of common law. But they just got away with it. They did it under rule. So their rules, the Trump or law, and it also trumps the Constitution. That's how they've been living and working. They're all bar attorneys, and that's the problem. They all have the same poison in their mind, and they practice that poison. And whether they understand it or not, I don't care. It doesn't matter to me. They're guilty. They've done so much damage. It's incalculable. You can't even calculate how much damage they've done, the lives they've cost, people who died because of their decisions, people who've gone to jail with juries that are no juries at all, stacked juries, control juries. The list goes on and on and on and on and on. We do have a paper. We spoke about this a couple of times anyway. I think we even mentioned it last week or the week before. We have a paper that we tried to get into the courts, to get to the United States Supreme Court. We kept getting blocked by the clerk over there and trying to put us into a situation which brings us under civil law, and we're just not going to do that. So the paper is pretty much written, but we're going to kind of refocus it, redirect it, and get the paper ready to demand that every federal, and we're going to work on the federal level. The state level, we'll have to figure out how that's going to happen. There's 50 states here. But in any event, on the federal level, it's one court system. And the bottom line is they've all been acting the same way. They've all been doing the same thing. So it's sort of an indictment on the federal judiciary. And they have to cease and desist due to the original 13th Amendment and the rules of common law. All bar attorneys, they can't practice law in our courts. They need to cease and desist also. Now, they can go out and learn the common law and go back into the courts, that's fine. But as far as the judges are concerned, they've done so much damage. I think over the next quite a few years, there's going to be so many lawsuits that people are going to go back to get their justice from all of these judges. But we need to set the stage by getting rid of all of them. And then anybody who fills the court cannot be part of the Bar Association. The 13th Amendment won't permit it. I'm talking about the original 13th Amendment. I think it was 1818 is when it was brought into law, I believe. I know it was during Jefferson's time. So, anyway. All right, well, where are we, Jan?
Well, do you want to continue on that question or go to the next one?
Yeah, give me the question again because I probably went off on
okay.
it.
How can we proceed with charging and or unseating judges who are committing prosecutorial misconduct?
Yeah, we've been working on that. You're not going to get anything done now. Nothing's going to happen until devolution comes to play. Only then are we going to be able to do anything about it. But the first order of business is to bring the courts back under court of justice again, to get rid of their civil law and bring back law and equity as the Constitution requires. So once we do that, then I got a whole list of judges that I want to go after, in court. I want to sue them. I want to pull their bonds. The bond is the best way to go if you're going after a judge. But you're not going to get a hold of a bond. It's really a tug of war to try to get a hold of a bond. We've been trying to get judge's bond for 8 months now. And this guy has fought us tooth and nail. He finally just threw us out of court, and that's on the federal level now. So we've got a couple of cases going on. And we have to have patience. You know, if you have to be in court, try to drag it out as long as you can drag it out. Try to get to the other side of devolution. If you're going to sue someone or sue a judge or something like that, I would suggest to wait till after devolution. If you're in court already and you got a case going on, keep a really good record. Make sure you write good papers. And then you're going to get thrown out or you're going to lose probably, especially if you're going up against the status quo. But you can resurrect your case again on the other side of devolution, which is no more than a year away now. Okay? Could be months, could be weeks, could be, I don't know. Don't know when it's going to happen. From listening to Trump, it sounds like it's going to happen before next Christmas. So I don't know what that means. We know the bank is running down. We know that they're pushing for the court case for Trump. I think it was supposed to be in March. They're trying to push that away further closer to the election, which is kind of crazy because that'll only help Trump more. But what they're trying to avoid, I think, is the truth being unfolded that's going to unfold in that court case and that everyone's going to see. And that'll be the final nail in the coffin. And at that point, they would have to do something really drastic. And I think that would hit a tripwire that would require the military to go forward. We do know that there's a plan, but there's also tripwires. At least we've learned that from, I don't know that that's the particular language that Q had used, but we've learned that from Q, you know. We'll call it a tripwire. Something happens where the military has to move. And that could be violence in the streets. It could be a whole bunch of other things. There's a lot of things going on, and who knows what's going to happen. All right, next question.
Okay, last week, Gerard mentioned a form from the IRS that would allow one to no longer have wage taxes withheld. Does he recall this form, and can he re-mention it?
Well, you know, I would strongly suggest not to do that because all you're doing is putting yourself onto the radar. To do it, it's going to be real difficult to get an employer to go along with this because they'll attack and assault the employer. If you're self-employed, well, that's an easy way to get away with it. You create your corporation, just kind of disappear from things, and, you know, you can get away with things for quite some time. But the thing is this, we are so close. This year is over. Moving into a next year, okay, well, April starts the new year, I guess, for them, I think. Isn't it April where the taxes start, or it's not January 1st, or maybe it is January 1st, and the paper filing is by April 15th or something. But in any event, we're moving into the new year, which means the taxes that they're going to try to go out after for you now, okay, isn't going to be available until the following year. You'll have to pay it, unless you got a business going and you have been claiming things and you're doing things quarterly. And again, that's a whole different ballgame there. But the point that I'm trying to get to is the other side of devolution, all this ends. The Federal Reserve is going to be gone. Matter of fact, the banks, once they fail, the Federal Reserve fails and falls, everything falls apart. So the whole system falls apart. But I would not chase that down. If you're stuck in a situation and you had to fight in court, that's a different story. But I would be very careful about making any moves right now against them.
I need to clarify that. There is an IRS form to keep them from taking withholding out of your check.
Right. That doesn't mean you're moving from the system, right?
They were forced to do that because they had to offer that in order to stay legal. Somebody got them, and they were forced to put that form out. And you can fill it out, but here's the problem. If you're generating any information reports, and you know what an information report is? That's any time anybody puts you down as getting income and reports on you, like you do work for an insurance company and they fill out a 1099, and they'll do it whether you have something on file with them or not. These businesses, as a matter of fact, there was a guy, I think it was Pete Hendricks, that had that on his website. He said, if you get an information report that they reported the income that they gave to you, because when you do work for an insurance company, they just assume everybody has to pay income tax, right? So they report you to the IRS, and they do it with a 1099. And then what you're supposed to do is you're supposed to file a paper saying this is a false information report that is not taxable income. I am not the subject of the tax. And if you don't do that, basically that 1099, just like your W-2 and your W-4, it's saying I am a taxpayer and I am bound by your rules. That's the problem. And like John says, if you're self-employed, you can keep that down to a low roar. You don't have a lot of information reports going in if you're not using your Social Security number to buy parts tax-free or something stupid like that. I wouldn't do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, DBAs could have a big problem trying to do something with that, but definitely corporations. You make corporations. I've had quite a few corporations. And, you know, you can get it. They don't chase you. They can't find the individual. They got to go searching for the individual. They've never searched for me to search me out.
Well, listen, if you make less than $6,000 a year, it's not taxable anyway. So if they have less than $6,000 a year in information reports, they got no reason to be coming looking for you in the first place.
They go after people that are getting on Social Security, getting the bare minimum, and they can't even barely afford to live, and they think that they should be taking money out or at least filing, even though they're not going to pay anything into it because they're not making enough. That's true. Nevertheless, they require you to file. They push that issue pretty hard.
I don't think you're required to file if it's under a certain amount.
Let's put it that way.
Who claims you are? They claim
the
you are?
The IRS. Yeah.
Oh, that's a lie from hell, though. Well, I wouldn't do it.
Everything they do is a lie from
hell. I wouldn't do it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
All right, Jan, back to you.
That's the last one, John. You're all done.
All right, well, we have an open queue. Anybody wants to get into the queue? I know I saw someone over there already. Let me take a quick look. Yeah, there's only one person in the queue. Anybody wants to get into the queue? If you're on a phone, it's *6 and 1. If you come in on an app or browser, there should be a button there, I guess, to push to get into the queue. And, Gerard, I got to leave at least 15 minutes before the program ends tonight, so maybe around 10 o'clock I'll pass things over to you, but I'll be in the background for a while. It's about 9:30 now. All right, we'll take a first and only caller at the moment. Michael. You got, let's see if we can get it. Next question. Michael, you got the mic. Go right ahead. What state you're from, Michael?
Hey, John, how you doing? Can you hear me okay?
Good, we can hear you.
Beautiful. I'm in Western Washington, and I just want to throw out, I went through the NLA legal access with the common law course, and I thought it was fantastic. I appreciate you very much. I got a question I'm hoping you can help me with on some direction. How do I get my county treasurer to recognize my declaration of acceptance of land patent that I filed with the county auditor back in 2020? I filed my declaration of acceptance of land patent. I had it professionally prepared by a paralegal. A paralegal who is renowned nationwide with experience and such, and I filed it, sent a notice to the Kitsap County the treasurer in my county saying, hey, I filed my acceptance, I advised them of my land patent status and sent them a notarized notice and demand to remove my property from the tax rolls and mark all maps, documents, etc., otherwise regarding my parcel as private. As you can imagine, crickets, nothing, no response whatsoever. Fast forward 3 years, they send me a notice of foreclosure on my property. That's this year. They sent me a notice of foreclosure if I didn't pay up all my taxes from 3 years ago. I guess it's if you're delinquent 3 years, then they get jiggy on bringing you current. In any event, as I know that I want to, how would I go about filing an estoppel or getting a declaratory judgment recognizing my
Well, this is, first of all, you did a notice and demand already. Did you do it properly? Did you make it with the 8 points that you have to cover and laid out exactly how you're going to deal with the problem if they do not respond, that you'll take control of the whole process and decide for them?
Let me, not specifically 8 points, I was clear about my intention, my direction in the letter.
The problem. We learned this from Bill Thornton, and I'm sure he learned it from someone else, but he was very specific, and we rewrote a lot of what he had done with that and laid it out. We've written our own notice. Did you use our format as a notice and demand, the form that we put together, or did you find it somewhere else, or where did you get it from? Because that's an important point.
Yeah, this was actually before I found NLA that I submitted this. This is back in...
You to do. You're in the course, you said, right?
Yes, correct.
You can skip forward if you're not there yet to the notice and demand area and learn about the notice and demand. And you can then take the form that we have laid out for personal information. It's just a form. Basic, you just have to put your information into it. And I'm not sure. I'd have to think about this. And I'll try to think about this maybe over the course of the next 2 weeks when we come back on the 8th. Maybe if you want to talk more on this, I could talk a little more. Or maybe add something onto that. Because I think we can add into that. And we may not have to add into that. But I would want to put it on record that the first procedure you would go about to deal with the problem is pulling their oath and bond.
Yep, got them both. I got it. I got his oath, his bond. The treasurer has changed since my initial filing. There's been a subsequent replacement of the treasurer. So I got the oaths and bonds of the ones that I originally filed with, and then the oaths and bond of the treasurer, the present treasurer, who sent me the notice of foreclosure.
Okay,
so I have
Michael. I got a question for you.
Yes, sir.
Did you send anything to your tax assessor about removing the property from the tax rolls? Did you notice the tax assessor?
The treasurer, is that the same? Are we calling the same guy the treasurer?
No, not the treasurer, the tax assessor. She's the one that does the evaluations and lays the tax and determines if the property, it's her sole, his sole responsibility to say if the place is taxable or not. I mean, you when you go to the bank, you always file that paper that they give you that basically says I'm a taxpayer, and she puts it on the roll. And when you want to get it taken off, you have to go to her. That treasurer, that clerk, those people in the county have no authority to put on or remove that property. That's her job. She's elected. She's an elected official, and that's her job. And they're not going to do her job for her. If you say, remove my property, you're barking up the wrong tree. You got to talk to the assessor first.
Yeah, I agree with that. The treasurer is the wrong one to go for. Go to
They're not going
to
do it. They're not going to do it.
Well, go to the tax assessor, as Gerard said.
You should educate the assessor, and you should tell her, you should show her why. It's better to try to do it nice and get her on board with you, and then say, look, and then if you don't do it, what you're doing is you're doing a crime. That's my spiel. That's on this subject. So.
No, I appreciate you definitely.
Saying is correct, but let me add a little bit onto that. The first order of business, as Gerard has mentioned, is to go to the tax assessor, which would be what are you in, a town, a city, a village? What are you in?
I'm in a city that's in a county.
Okay, well, all cities are in counties anyway. So.
We have a county assessor.
Yeah. Well, no, I don't think so. There would probably be a city, because there's got to be something local. Each town has its own, and cities have their own. It's got to be their own. Just do a little research on that. I cannot see how it would go up to the county.
No, I think you're right, John. I think it has to be a city assessor.
Well, you know, but in any event, you find out who that is, and you go. I would try going to talk to them first and then follow up with paperwork after. But the first order of business, you've done all the paperwork, you bring a copy of all your paperwork or whatever it is that you've done, you go over and you say, hey, look, I want to move my property out of residential into private. You don't even have to talk about tax or anything, because at that point it no longer is taxable. So, but they're probably not going to do it. They're going to give you a hard time. That's when you do a notice and demand. Now, it followed the process of the notice and demand to the tax assessor, and then make sure you put it clearly in there, you know, exactly what you're going to do. I'll look to, like I said, to see if I might update it with putting in the idea of oath and bonds. Matter of fact, you should probably declare that you demand it, not declare. You want to demand their oath and bond.
Can I bring up another thing?
Yeah, go ahead.
You already allowed the property to go in arrears. You did not notice the tax assessor. If I were you, and I mean, I'm just giving you my own opinion here. I don't have any special anything. I think you should pay the taxes, refile the thing in the right place, because basically they could say we were never noticed. You're in arrears. You never told them that. And see, it would be better if you never let it get to that, because you alerted everybody. If you would have just dealt with the tax assessor probably, if you showed them your evidence and you convinced her, she's going to do it quietly and she's not going to even tell them. Because they have tax-exempt properties all over the place, right?
So you don't think they have any knowledge of being able to do what he'd be asking them to do, and she'd have to go get some, probably talk to the county attorney or to the city attorney, and that guy's a bar attorney. And
they have phone numbers that they call in the state for like, that they get advice. They got attorneys at the state.
They've got to find somebody, and they're going to go up against them and say no, but who knows what's going to happen.
I know that this guy in Florida, if that's how he does it, he gets the assessor to remove it from the rolls. Now, whether that assessor went and got legal advice or not, that's why he educates them and sits them down and says, look, this is your obligation. If you don't do it, you're breaking this law and that law, and I will go after you for it. I mean, he does it nicely, but they do not have to get permission to do that. That buck stops with that assessor. Be sure they don't have to get the permission. They're an elected official. They're not beholden to anybody. And you can't say that they got to go to school or this or that. And they do have to go to school. But what I'm saying is that's where the buck stops. So once you draw attention to yourself like that, where they actually got your house on the foreclosure rolls, it's going to be much harder for you to navigate and get out of this, because technically you didn't notice the right person when you did it. So that's what I see. That's what pops up at me right now.
Yeah, that could be a problem. I don't disagree with that. And it's strategic to do that if you can afford to do that, depending on the situation right now. But bottom line is, your intent is to get that money back. You need to pay it under protest. And then you need to go through the process. Which is going to be really, really difficult to do because, again, like I said, they're going to go to attorneys. The attorney's going to scratch the head. That's crazy.
Look, what you should have done is you should have taken that tax money and put it in escrow until you got your land patent so that you have the money. I mean, I don't know where you are financially, but you should have saved that tax money until this thing was resolved because of this very reason.
That may be a better way to go, in opposed to giving them the tax to get a lawyer.
Well, at least you can say it's not that I don't have it. It's that it doesn't apply to me, and so I put it aside here to show my good faith.
Right,
he
would have to go get really a lawyer that specializes in that and would be able to take care of that business for him.
You could just open an account and call it your tax escrow account, and you set it aside.
Right, want to get a lawyer for that, I would imagine. You want to make sure that it works well and it's set up right and that you say the right words. I have no knowledge in that.
Well, first of all, it doesn't matter. I wouldn't get a lawyer because the lawyer's not going to really help you the way you need him to help you.
You want the lawyer to just accept the escrow account, let him know what you're doing, and you've got to get someone that'll open the escrow. They have escrow accounts.
Well,
the escrow account for you in lieu of the conclusion.
If you can get a stay from a judge while you're fighting it, then I agree, you'll set up an escrow account. When I did it, I didn't pay my tax and I was in arrears, and what they did was they scared me into paying it. And basically he told me, he said, I want to tell you that the day they bang the gavel and you lose this case, you're already foreclosed because we have this in rem procedure. So basically, they already had converted my deed, and they were just waiting for the case to get through court. I mean, I'm sure that's illegal, but that's how So I ended up paying it before we went to trial, and then it was a trick. They got me, and I was with somebody else that has many properties and was doing it with me. And the judge says, well, the point is moot because the taxes are paid. What we should have done is we should have went to another judge. We should have brought it to another court, and we should have got an injunction. And then that judge would have had us put the money in escrow until the trial was over when we fought our case. But we didn't, you know, like you said, I didn't know everything back then, and we didn't do that. So that's just a little information to maybe lubricate your brain, because I don't know what could happen. These guys don't follow the law anyway, so you're on your own with that, you know.
Right. So at the time of filing, in my declaration of acceptance of land patent, the paralegal that prepared it for me also had me file a quitclaim removing the property from equity into an at-law status. The county accepted this filing. This is on record. So all my paperwork is on record. I've been dealing exclusively with the auditor. I didn't think to go through.
Does that paralegal have escrow accounts? Do you know?
Escrow accounts? No, that never came up.
He doesn't need an escrow account per se. He's just doing that to cover his own butt.
I understand. If he's going to put the money aside somewhere and have it to have some legal clout to it, it's got to be an escrow account. In other words, the money is there, and it's dependent upon the conclusion of the matter. And that's one way to go. The other thing is are they ready to try to take your property now? I think you mentioned
that. No, it's going to. That happened this year. At the end of this year, I'll be 3 years behind from the next year. So in April of next year, they'll send me a notice of foreclosure if I don't pay within 30 days.
Yeah, you got to take
that. Yeah. So
if it's in court by then, there's nothing they can do because they can't act until the court case is over.
Right, so, right.
And now and then you want to push your notice and demand. You want to get your oath and bond. And then once you get your oath and bond, you pull that bond and get an administrative hearing with the bond company. And then maybe that in itself will force that individual to do what has to be done. Or the end results of that is not only the penalty of the problems as far as, your injury is concerned is one thing, but the other thing is an injury of 3 years that, hey, this person should pay it, not me. Now, they're going to play a game with you. There's a lot of things that you try to do. They try to pull you into an Article 70, I think it's called Article 78 or 79. I'm pretty sure it's a 78.
78, I think it is.
But they pull you into what's called an Article 78, which is a process they set up so that the Constitution doesn't come to play. I'm in a debate and an argument to that in court right now. And so that becomes a problem there, and you got to be able to deal with that. Matter of fact, the cases that I'm working on right now, at some point in time, when they're concluded, which may be a couple of months from now, I'm going to post those cases up, the entire cases, so that people can go and see those cases from the very beginning and the response and all the things they've done and what the judge has to say and all this craziness. It would be a real good study for anyone in cases of this type. But bear in mind another thing. Once we get on the other side, we'll be in common law again. We've got courts of justice back, and civil law doesn't apply to anything. And 78 is totally irrelevant. It doesn't apply to us. It's there to protect them. I owe the state nothing, and they owe me nothing, period, end of subject. And my argument right now, they're trying to pull me into that 78. I opened a court of record, and they're trying to pull me into that 78 business. But the bottom line is it's a violation of my right of due process. It's a violation of my, in this case, the 4th, 5th, and 7th Amendment. And I cannot bring those issues up. I can't bring up the 4th Amendment. I can't bring up the 5th Amendment. I can't bring up the 7th Amendment in an administrative court. Even though it's being operated in a state court, it's an administrative court.
And the Supreme Court just ruled that they're administrative courts, which is a good thing.
Oh, I didn't know about that.
Look at all the ABC agencies.
Drop it in my Skype. I'll go read up on that.
Yeah, they did. They did. They just ruled it. And everybody missed it because they did it around the time that they repealed Roe versus Wade.
Oh.
And I said, don't you realize that this is a big thing, that they ruled on it with the Department of Environmental Conservation or something like that was the case. But the language said that these are all administrative offices, which means it was taking into consideration all those ABC offices. And basically they said you can only go after anybody that's contracted with you or working for you or whatever. And that language is in there. I think I did give you that paper, John, but I'll look and see if I can find it.
Well, I misunderstood.
It was like last year. And something just happened, I think, this week, if I'm not mistaken. I got to look into that.
Whatever you can find in there, let me know, because that'll help.
But, Michael, I got another question for you.
Yes, sir.
What was that paper you said that you filed, that the paralegal made and the county accepted it? What was it called?
It was a quitclaim removing the property from equity to a at-law status.
Okay, so that's a good thing. They accepted it. I don't want to tell you what to do or anything. I'm not giving you legal advice, but you may want to consider copying that document and sending it over to the assessor and say, look it, this thing was already accepted. You should have done the work to do this. You didn't do it. And now I'm in arrears. And see what happens. See what they say.
Gotcha. Okay.
Follow up with your notice and demand.
So notice and demand to the assessor. Get their oaths and bonds.
Don't pursue the oath. Let me think about it. You can ask for the
oath. I don't know if you should do a notice and demand to the assessor. I think you should give her a copy of the quick claim deed and say, look at
that's exactly what I'm saying. Yeah, ask
her. You need to fix this.
If it's a negative response from the assessor, that's when you do your notice.
Right, exactly.
And then that's when you'll demand also oath and bond.
Right.
Okay,
we've got to give them a chance to do so.
There's a form for each. There's a form for demand of notice and for oath and bond, and there's a form which is also a notice and demand, response, and they have to respond to something with 8 points, and if they don't, then you're going to take care of the business for them. They've given you the authority. In other words, it's like filling out what's called a Form 56, the government, in order giving someone the fiduciary authority. So once they forfeit or default on the notice and demand, then they've accepted you as their fiduciary authority to get to decide for them. And that's the position you take now. It's an uphill battle to fight that in the court today because they don't like people. But on the other side of things, it definitely will have power and clout.
So is my first correspondence with the assessor not a notarized notice and demand?
Go to them and talk to them and give them the paperwork, like Gerard said, and say, hey, this is what's happening there. I'm trying to get you to do what you got to do now. You got to move my property over to private property.
You give her a copy of their acceptance of your quit claim because that's a legal document. See, they should have walked it over to the tax assessor, him or her.
Right.
And he didn't do it. She doesn't know that it was there. You got to give her the benefit of the doubt. They probably all got together and talked and they didn't know what to do with you because they're not used to this crap. So they made the decision to, do what they did, which was basically ignore you and just keep adding the taxes like they didn't know anything. So you go over there with a copy of that, and you can have a conversation or you can make a letter and say, look, it's up to you to fix this. What are you going to do about it? Because you should have got this. And I'm sorry if they didn't send it to you, but it's your responsibility.
Gotcha. That's good advice. I like that. Where is that, John? Where is that 8-point notice and demand? I'm not familiar with it. It's on the website?
Yeah. If you go in, you're in the court access course, right?
Yep. The common law court. Is there another?
Okay. On the court access course, go to the table of contents. And let's see. Control find. Well, maybe I should put demand in there, too. Hold on. Let me put demand. Notice and demand. It's Chapter 10.
Okay. Chapter 10.
Writs and demands.
Notice and demand.
Yes. Getting down to it.
All right. You got some instructions, and you got the form. You fill it out. And you have to add in here, and I'll do this if you if you're going to wait until we come back on the 8th. New Year's. I will add in here the notice and demand.
Perfect. I'm not seeing. Are you saying it's not in the list right now? Notice and demand.
I don't recall. I don't recall it being in here, but that doesn't mean it's not in here. If it's not in here, I'll put it in here.
Yeah, if you could. I don't see it. I see Chapter 10 starting with the appeal process. I'm running through it. I don't see any. I see notice of appeal. Notice of appeal to tax court. Notice of appeal to court of appeals from a judgment judgment court. Notice of appeal. Notice of appeal. Oath and bond enforcement. Petition of review. Written seizure sale. Writ to cease and desist. I don't see a notice of demand in Chapter 10.
Oh yeah, there is. So hang on. Let me go back to that. It's right here under writs, rights, and demands. Here's Chapter 10.
Okay.
And then you come over to the right, writs, rights, and demands, and it's a notice and demand right there.
Gotcha. Okay, found it. Excellent.
Now, your notice and demand could be used, and this was written to be used on anyone, even corporations, you know. So it doesn't necessarily have to be just in a government situation, you know, a bureaucrat or somebody. But there's also a notice and demand for oaths and bonds, okay? Let me see if that's going to show up. Let's see.
Yep, that's in there. That's right above it. And in Washington State, anyway, they're pretty forthcoming on the oaths and bonds. In fact, we have an RCW 4256. It's our Public Records Act. When I submit a Public Records Act document request under 4256, they have 5 days to respond.
The question becomes on whether you want to do two different notice and demands or combine them. I think I'm going to sit down and think if I can make a notice and demand that combines both of them. For a notice and demand for identification and credentials is one, and then the other notice and demand is for, they're violating you. So, and they need to take notice, and you have to describe what it is that they're doing and what they need to do to fix it. And if they don't fix it, that you'll take care of business for them, and you'll become their fiduciary. It's like the government becomes, you know, it sets forth a fiduciary for you to take your money away in these court systems. You know, the IRS is acting as a fiduciary. Well, there's no doubt about it. The IRS is acting as a fiduciary. Because they come and take total control. They go into your bank account. They do whatever they please. They don't care.
Gotcha. Okay, very good. Notice of demand to the assessor. It had none of me to approach it from that capacity. Excellent. I appreciate you guys.
I'll come with a more definitive answer on the 8th when we come back again. And
awesome. I'll be here.
Then, you know, I'm kind of thinking maybe you should do it in a twofold way. You do the notice and demand first for the business at hand, and then after they fail that, then a notice and demand for oath and bonds. And then you open up a court case in order to execute it.
And then
going in there for a default system that's already taken place. A default has already happened. But you may not have to do that if you get there, if they do respond to your credential request, okay, so now you've got all of their financials, you've got their oath, you got their bond. Well, now you could take it right into the bonding company and go through their administrative process and get a decision. And if you're not happy with that, you can move into a court. You can go through an appeal, then you can move it into the court.
Gotcha. Okay, that's good direction. I appreciate it.
It's really helpful to have extra things to be able to do, move to a different place. Maybe you get the right person along the road.
And then if I do have to go to court, am I looking for an estoppel, a declaratory judgment?
No. Let me think about this. Then it's not an estoppel. That would be on the other way around.
An injunction?
You're just looking for enforcement, really, because you've done all the necessary proper things, and you pull all the paperwork. They defaulted numerous times. and you're moving into the court for justice. And the problem will be that if you get denied in courts, then you're going to have to challenge the jurisdiction and demand that they acknowledge the jurisdiction you came in under. And if you wrote your papers correctly, you're in on a court of record, which proceeds according to the common law. And
right.
And you got to get the judge to agree that this is the court that they done. I 8 months I was fighting this judge for numerous things. I mentioned one or two before, but the other thing were what jurisdiction. They took me from a state court, moved me into a federal court. They always do that. And then I challenged the jurisdiction because they didn't have subject matter jurisdiction. They knew they didn't have subject matter jurisdiction. They refused to. Then I said they changed my cover sheet, and they changed also the other paperwork to change me from a trial by jury to a trial by judge. Okay, and I went through that problem, you know, telling them, well, look at what jurisdiction are we in? Okay. The judge problem is another problem. We're appealing through that. But the what jurisdiction we in? And the judge refused to tell me jurisdiction. And I in a hearing, I even asked him. And he, no, that was a different case. No. Anyway, this case here, we did ask in writing numerous times. And then he threatened to sanction if we continue to ask for it. He's not going to tell us. So now
wow.
He refused. Now he goes and he does eventually sanction us. So we appealed the sanction. While we're in appeal for the sanction, he threw the case out. And one of the things he wrote in there, he was quoting under USC 26. So now we revealed the jurisdiction he moved us into, which is an administrative process that we had no part of. We want a court of justice. We want the Constitution. Now, that all of everything that this judge has done is a violation of a right, unalienable rights. And so this is completely, a constitutional issue at this point. So, and that's just dealing with the judge. Now, the case is a whole different story now. You see, every time I go into court, I'm always fighting with the judge. Every single time, it doesn't fail.
You know? Right, right.
John, did you put it on the record that he would not give you the jurisdiction in open court?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
He refused to give you the jurisdiction.
I write everything down. Everything we write is sworn to. Every paper we hand into the court. Sworn to. It's an affidavit form. So everything I do with them or government, if I write a paper to the IRS, I'm gonna make it an affidavit. Anytime I deal with a government agency, it's affidavit communications from my perspective.
So this guy's already in trouble. Then the day that this system goes down, he's gonna be packing his bags because he knows he's gonna go to jail.
Well, if he's rich, I'm gonna be rich.
Listen, I want to say one other thing. I think that you want to be strategize when you ask for their oaths and bonds. Now, I don't know how your state is or your county is, but the insurance companies are very much sticklers when they get complaints against somebody and against their oath and bond. If they get wind of it, they will pull their insurance. So I would use that strategically, because some of them might some insurance companies might require them to report when somebody asks for their oath and bond. Well, you know, I know that if you're going to put it.
That's where another notice and demand would come about. Is look at you notice and demand, first of all, for justice to do the right thing. Second notice of demand is for oaths and bonds. Well, finally, after that, the third would be no third notice and demand. Either you do the right thing and the just thing, otherwise I'm going to approach the bonding company. Now, we have to think about how we'd write something up.
I'm telling you, some of the insurance companies require them to let them know when somebody is asking for it, because they want to be on top of it.
Wow, that's interesting.
And they want to be able to pull that insurance policy out from that person and leave them with no insurance if they can. Yeah. So I'm telling you to be careful when you file it. I mean, I would hold off sending a notice and demand for their oaths and bonds until you get to the point where you're going to use that lawsuit on their.
Well, yeah, that's why he's got to do it procedurally. He's got to do.
You don't want to stick it up front because what you're doing is you're firing your bullet before you're ready to, is the way I see it. You know, you want to save that bullet until the right time.
I'd like to think about this on this paperwork to see if I can't merge it together anyway in a fashion, not necessarily asking for the notice and bonds, but making it known that this is one of the things that might be decided.
Right. I like that. I like that strategy that you just said. I think that's
cuts off a second run to those. You got to, every time you go through this, you got to give them 30 days. I know it's been said you'd give them 30 days if it's state and 60 days if it's federal. You know, they're prima donnas, I guess. You know, but that's not written and etched in law. But look, at 30 days is the norm. Everybody gets 30 days.
Could I include in my first notice of demand if satisfaction isn't delivered, then in the same mailing, say if satisfaction isn't delivered, then provide your oath and bond?
Well, again, you know, you put it into the notice and demand, and if you look back to the notice and demand, you put down your name. I demand that you, in good faith, do your duty, correcting your files, and send me a certified mail that your letter correcting within 60 days. I would do 30 days. Well, it says 60 days for federal agents, 30 days for all others. So you just get out to 60, put 30. Return money stolen from me. Again, it depends on what this is about. With interest and penalties, etc. And then you go on. Here's the key part. This is where you're taking fiduciary authority. If you do not do as demanded within the allotted time, then by tactic proclamation, I will determine for you the facts, your duties, and the damages you owe me. You see, once they default, you become their fiduciary. If you do not perform as demanded, I will take lawful action in personam and in rem to defend against you and persons acting in concert with you who cause to or attempt to cause said injuries to secure my substantive rights and to redeem the damage owed to me. If you fail to satisfy the demand within the allotted time, after having been duly served with this notice and demand, then by tactic proclamation, I, with your name, or my nominee, you might get someone else to do it for you, or my assigns will determine for you the following: that the aforesaid demand is just, that a court of record in New York, or in my case, but whatever you're at, may enforce the demand either ex parte or con parte, and three, that you and each of you concur, if there's more than one, and are satisfied with the justness of the demand and the process by which the demand shall be enforced. Now, bear in mind, you've got to make this work for your stuff. So there's a few words in here you'd have to change. You know, if there's more than one person, or, you know, who are you going up against and what you're doing. And you are hereby advised that, okay, and then get some law in there, and so on and so forth. That, you know, look, first of all, what happens is these people, they'll take it right to the attorney. They'll take it if it's a county situation, they'll go to county, town attorney, city, whatever the case may be. And the attorneys, don't worry about that. They don't even recognize what we're doing. This is common law, okay? And it's been around for a long, long time. But they're not taught this. And they just ignore it as if it's nothing. But it is a fact of law, okay? And if justice prevails, that lawyer, that county attorney or whatever attorney, will end up with egg on the face, and the person's going to lose.
Hey, but John.
We have courts of injustice instead of courts of justice. Yeah.
I wonder if where you say that you're going to pursue them, if you couldn't sneak in there, including a claim on your bond.
Well, I'm going to pull the two together and see how I might put it.
Right, and just sneak it in there, at least where you're telling them I'm going to attach your bond.
Identifications and credentials. So Maybe just by putting in there that particular phrase that you're demanding it.
Right, you're signaling.
You're going to have a demand, or you put that into the. So I don't know. I have to think about it.
I'm going to pursue to the fullest extent of the law, including putting a claim on your bond. Just as an afterthought.
You want to try to work some words out. Maybe we can find some cases or something. I don't know, but
right.
You know, there's a lot in here. When you go after someone's identifications and credentials, this is it's 5 pages. And there's a lot of information in here, and you have to make sure that they're fully informed. You can't leave them out. So I have to think this out, go through all the wording in here, try to see what might need to be extracted from here to put into the other notice and demand, and how you may couch it in there so that it becomes all in one 30-day thing instead of having to go through again another 30-day thing, you know? Because
right.
I already stated the fact that you got different, and it would be put probably, you know, in this, you know, what it is that you're going to do right in this area here if you do not demand within the allotted time, blah, 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 somewhere in there. I'm not sure. I have to think about it. But I'm going to find it and see if that's feasible. And if that becomes problematic, I'll let you know in the ace.
Yeah. Getting yos and bonds around this neck of the woods anyways isn't a problem. I've got, every time I've gone to court, I get all the cops O's. I submit all the cops O's anyways. I collect their O's and bonds and then submit their O's as exhibits in my...
Go to federal court and see what happens.
Yeah.
I think that's getting away with it there in the state. Maybe we'd have the same kind of success also even in New York. I don't know, but
listen,
federal, forget about it.
I think if they're very forthcoming with their bonds and oaths, it means that their insurance company is not a stickler like I'm talking about. Because if it was, they wouldn't want to give it to you right away. They would stall.
It would against the law for them not to.
What's that?
And that is exactly what this other paper lays out, the fact of what the law is, what the requirement is, and it lays it all out. Let's see. Public officials bond statutory obligation required. Here, let me open this up a little further. Public officials bond a statutory obligation requiring faithful performance. The purpose of a bond is when they don't exercise faithful performance. So right there, again, you know, how I would put that together, I'd have to think about it.
Gotcha.
The way I think I could put it together is to demand both at the same time.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. And it's the form that I've been using, I put together myself, but I call it an RCW 4256 public records document request. And like I said, I've had no problems. I get O's and bonds within 5 days. I've never had a problem, actually, with them being forthcoming on that end. It's just getting them to honor their O's. That's the catch-22. That's good. This is direction. This is something I can use. Appreciate it. Also, I was listening in prior to you guys taking my call. Revocation of election is the name of the form.
Hold on. If anybody else wants to get into the queue, we only have 2 people in the queue. So one other person other than Michael here. So *601 if you're on a phone, or hit that button if you're on a app or a browser. Go back. Go ahead, Michael.
The IRS form to get out of the system, I have not used it myself, but I've heard other people have excellent results with it. The form is called Revocation of Election. You're opting out of the system, and supposedly there's a form. I've not put my eyeballs on it, but I've just heard of it recently from someone.
I know someone who's done that. They've done it as an employer, and boy, did he get into some big problems. He didn't expect, and he lost a lot of money, and I know he was back up in business. This had happened before I had met him. This is, what's his name, Gerard, from Primary Challenge. I can't think of his name. Lenny Liberta. Is it Liberta?
Roberto. Lenny Roberta. What about him?
Roberto. Yeah, well, one of his companies that he had, okay, and he was working with Bob Schultz on this, and he served notice concerning the fact that the taxes was a problem and he was going to bail out of it, and they served some notice. I guess he found forms, but he filed it from as an employer's perspective, okay, and they beat him up pretty bad, you know, really bad, financially, economically speaking, anyway. So I know he was back up in business by the time we met him. This had happened before at an earlier
Right. Yeah.
Over the story.
Okay. I just thought I'd throw that.
Like I said, it's not worth that battle at this moment. I will tell you, if I had the knowledge that I have now, back some years ago when I started fighting these people, I would approach things in a different way, because I can, you know, I can. They when you get the paperwork from them and they're chasing you, they tell you the law. And they say, we have a right to ask for these things and you are required by law to answer them. And they give you a code. Well, I went down that code, went down the rabbit hole of that code, and discovered that, you know, I'm not liable. How are you not liable? Because it has something to do tobacco, particularly tobacco and fuel, okay?
Alcohol, tobacco, and firearms.
Well, they didn't bring firearms up into this part, but just the tobacco, the tax on tobacco, and the tax on fuel, and it lays the whole thing out. And I wrote a court case on this, but I would like to have done it in a paper. Again, when I responded to the IRS when they were chasing me, I responded to every single paper they sent me. I mean, I kept them at bay for over 20 years before they actually literally came out after me, and. But, you know, the thing is I always ask them questions and never answer. So I was building a case. Not that I knew much about it, but that's what I was doing. But now I would approach them in a different way in challenging their codes. The other code that they have, first of all, who is a taxpayer? They define a taxpayer. You can beat that up and ask them to correct you if you're in error. The United States Supreme Court has ruled numerous times that the 16th Amendment has nothing new to the tax law. And that it's not, and that ultimately, you know, there is no requirement to pay taxes, income taxes. So there's nothing out there. You can bring those things in, and then of course, and then also they never come for you. They take fiduciary authority over you, whatever, out for filing the Form 56. They also take, what they call a notice of lien without taking a lien and filing what's called the Form 4490, and that 4490 is a proof of claim. So there is no proof of claim. So nothing exists. So when you get into a court, especially from the IRS, there is no sworn affidavit. Nobody will swear to an affidavit that you owe anybody money because the whole thing's fraud and it's built upon nothing. They can't prove anything. Unless you shared your papers with them, maybe then they can claim some proof and someone would sign something. But right now, like when they came after me, they just looked at my different things that I had going and saw certain amounts of money here and money there and just put it all together and said, that's what you owe us, out of bank accounts. And over a course of a year and so on and so forth. So anyway, the thing is, though, it's a real hassle fighting these people. But you can keep them at bay for a long time, number one, and I would not pick a fight with them now because their time is coming to an end very shortly.
Beautiful.
Keep them at bay. That's all. Keep them at bay.
Excellent, gentlemen. I appreciate your time. Thanks for taking my call.
All right, Gerard, you got the table here, the control.
What? Okay. Okay, Marianne, you're up.
Hey there. Hi, Gerard.
Hey.
Get a little closer to your mic. We can't hear you.
Yeah, you sound very low.
Okay, how's that?
A little better. Can you get closer?
John's like the big bad wolf. Get a little closer.
How's that? Any better?
It is. I just turned up my speaker. Go ahead.
Yeah. Just a comment. I know there's been a lot of the off FBI and the whole thing with the false flags. I think that there's trying to set something up, and I've heard that this is going on. They're trying to set something up where they blame it on sovereign citizens.
Yeah, and, whatever that is, but go ahead.
Yeah, well, basically, how I see it as sovereign citizen itself is like QAnon. You know, QAnon really didn't exist.
Right.
So basically, anybody who's trying to promote their constitutionally protected God-given inalienable rights to do whatever, claim the Ninth Amendment, your Ninth Amendment rights, And so it's just basically kind of set. They're just trying to set up sovereign anybody as a sovereign citizen, so they can use them and set up patsies and stuff. So you just have to be really, really super careful. Anybody who wants to promote, you've already thrown many off from NLA because they try to call in and they're talking about.
We
need to.
Well, we didn't really throw people off per se. We shut down a couple of. Local, you know, a couple of county, how would I say it? Well, people that came together in a county under our name to teach what we're teaching and to do things and to create a committee of safety and things of that nature. And instead of teaching what we're teaching, they started teaching the man on the land stuff with the, and they've already established, or, you know, as far as this was, I forget which law firm did this. What was the name of that law group that was coming out after us, Gerard? They were trying to badger us, really. In any event, they declared and put into these police magazines, the police mag, that all of the...
Southern Poverty Law.
That's who it was, the Southern Poverty Law.
Yeah.
And they had an article there, and they laid out the fact that, you know, that these people that are called, sovereign citizens, and that is a big group. The only group was the father and son that shot a cop, and they got killed, too. But they called them cop killers. So we didn't want to be attached to any of that stuff. We're approaching the law from the perspective of the common law. We're using the Constitution and we're using their codes against them, because there's plenty of information in our codes that we can apply against them to force them to be obedient. The problem is they're not just. They ignore it and they do what they want. There is no real law in the court system. They change the law as the court cases move about. There are rules. They make the rules up as they go, and they enforce rules that deny your due process. What we did, and we did do. We wrote a paper on one of these or some of these. Well, we wrote them on all of them actually. If you want to look into it, on our left side of our website under the Welcome tab, you can come down to disclaimers. And you can read the disclaimers on things, the problems that we've had, and had to put a disclaimer up on the website, and in some places had to report it with different authorities. Because if we didn't, they probably would have put me in jail.
John?
Yeah, well, I guess that's what I'm saying, is that it's just a scare tactic. Obviously, NLA is a threat to the system, and anything that's a threat to the system, they're going to try to set it up. And if they can, like with what happened with that group, those guys, I wouldn't be surprised that they were somehow tied to being fed informants, and that's they just come out of the woodwork. And but just you've been aware of it, you have disclaimers. I'm not concerned to be associated with NLA. It's that people who are not associated with NLA and have not done the study, that have not even looked at your website, are the ones that judge. And they're afraid to get involved. And that's why I don't know I think there's going to be massive growth after devolution. I think beforehand people are too like, who do you trust? And
well, I think we're going to have a massive growth very soon, because there's some things playing out behind the scenes right now that might become interesting that we're not going to talk about yet, but there's something that might happen. In any event, one day something is going to happen. We'll get that massive growth, the critical mass. But the problem you're talking about is a problem that's been around for a very long time. The founding fathers had the same problem. And Mark Twain spoke about it here. He said, in the beginning of a change, the patriot is a scarce man, and brave and hated and scorned. Mm-hmm. When his cause succeeds, the timid join him, for then it costs nothing to be a patriot. And that is true what you're saying. They're putting fear into the people, so people are afraid to do anything, to step up, and so on and so forth. And that, of course, is the problem. But, again... Everything we've been visited by all kinds of law enforcement. We've had the FBI numerous times come out. We had the what was the other one? The Treasury.
Yeah, but, Treasury Department. Yeah. That's the law enforcement arm of the IRS, basically. Yeah.
And they all left reasonably satisfied with us and closed the case that on the report that they didn't find nothing.
They were either satisfied or frustrated.
Well, maybe both. But one of the things, you know, they would try to get me, look, we got this here. And I know who sent it, the judges sent it. And, you know, and he'll bring the paper and start reading this. Did you write that? And I said, no, I didn't write that. I said, that was written by Thomas Jefferson. I was just quoting it. You see, we quote. Everything we do is almost a quote. 90% of our paperwork is really just quotes, the Supreme Court quotes.
Don't you know our forefathers are terrorists? You don't know that yet?
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, those kind of conversations, what are they going to do? I mean, and these are the foot soldiers, you know. A lot of them are not really bad guys. So.
Do you remember, I wanted to ask you, John, while we're on this subject, there was a case that came out, and it was under civil rights. Somebody sued them for labeling them something. And basically the conclusion was is that they're not allowed to throw a label on you like sovereign citizen. You know what I mean? That's a problem. I mean, look at
that's what a bar attorney did, number one, and put it into the police magazine, number two, and then wrote their story being cop killers, and then I've seen videos that came out after that concerning the cops talking about the dangers of these people, you know. So if the government does it, yes, but I don't know that you could say that the government did it. This is the Bar Association that did it to begin with, you know, or a bar attorney, shall I say, you know.
Yeah, but if the cops are going to come out and arrest you for being a sovereign citizen...
Yeah, that cop... Well, again, it's not so much... It's not so much as being arrested for a sovereign citizen. It's the overreaction because they claim that you're a sovereign citizen and the danger of someone getting injured because of that. I mean, I've got a dog here that is very, very aggressive in the sense... A very good dog. Now, you know, doesn't really bite people or any people come in the house, but she doesn't trust anybody. But you try to come into the house, I mean, my dog has pinned people to the wall. And so if they broke into my house, broke down the door, they'd end up killing my animal, my dog. And that's a problem. I don't want to be in a situation where something like that could happen. But they'll claim that because I was a sovereign citizen, quote unquote, or this, that, or the other thing, then they had every right to do it the way they did it. They do it this way anyway. They break down doors all the time. They just love to go in and just harass people and throw them in jail over a weekend and drop them off in another state and find your way home with nothing. You know, things like that happens often. But again, we're very careful. We haven't ran into any problems. We spoke to a lot of law agencies. They've all walked away satisfied that there was no case here. We don't bring up the sovereign citizen thing. You know, if they ask if I'm sovereign, of course I'm sovereign. You're sovereign. We're all sovereign. Am I a citizen? Of course I'm a citizen. Do I belong to some group? No, no way. And if they want to know who we are, just go read our website. Plenty of proof on who we are. We're coming with the law. We're not coming with anything outside of the law.
I think you said that word enough times. The AI got it finally. I think they're listening.
There you go. Okay.
They are listening. I'll give you that.
No doubt about it. That's right.
And I wanted to mention, that whole thing with the Illinois Tollway. I've been really curious. I didn't pay the toll, and I just let it go. And I wanted to see at what point. So they sent me three notices, and now they sent me something for an administrative hearing. And I'm thinking. What I'll do is take my transponder with me, because I do own one, and then just go, you know, read them the Riot Act and say, oh, by the way, I do have a transponder I can pay for it with. And because I'm just really curious how they, about this whole thing with administrative hearings and how things run and how they're just really policing the people.
Well, you don't have to participate with an administrative hearing unless you signed up to participate with the administrative hearing, you know? The whole thing is a sham to begin with, but it's in-house. Administrative hearings are for people in-house. Or if you're in commercial activities and you're falling under some code or statute or whatever you want to call it, And you, when you went into the business, you agreed to, you know, for that commercial activity control, then you're signed up into it. But other than that, if you haven't signed up into it, so to speak, it has nothing to do with you.
What's she talking about? Tolls or camera tickets? What?
Well, I'm not too sure.
Okay, John, you can.
Can't hear you. Say
that. No, be specific on the case, because I don't know what the case is either, but go ahead.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I had driven my car through Illinois and then received a notice of toll notice, and I was like, this is really interesting. So I didn't pay it, and it's several, and so I didn't pay it, and I had driven to that area, but it was personal, just visiting people. It wasn't commercial activity at all. And then, but there was no way to. There was no recourse for it.
No, there isn't.
They sent a. They sent me. Well, they kept just saying, if you don't pay this, we're going to send you a notice for an administrative hearing. So I said, okay, so send me a notice for administrative hearing, and I'll see what I'll do with it once I receive this notice. So I finally received the notice for an administrative hearing, and basically, if I don't pay it by December 30th and don't contact them, then they will charge me $20 per toll as an additional fee, and they're like six or seven of them or something like that. Eight. Well, there'd be an even amount. So I just hadn't paid it.
Well, a lot of states will suspend your registration and or your driver's license. They don't even ask.
If they have a relationship with the state that you're living in, you're in a different state than where it took place, correct?
So if it's out of state, I don't know how much. Some states cooperate. They got agreements between each other.
Yeah, look, whenever you get something from the government or any kind of an agency in the government, and this, of course, is a government agency, you want to communicate back with them, and you want to respond with your knowledge and understanding of what you think the case is about, and then ask questions and demand and eventually demand answers. And, first of all, you don't participate, you're not participating in any commercial activities. Now, can you at all... You know, what kind of a toll was it? A toll on a highway, a toll on a bridge, what? I mean, that kind of is legal, the toll. Huh?
I-80.
On I-80?
Yeah.
What state? Well, you go to the other side of the house?
Yeah.
You lost her.
You have to yell.
It was Illinois. 30 days to pay in full or schedule a hearing. What's interesting...
You see, this is the horrible thing. Here's the thing. There's another problem here. If you're talking about a highway, okay, and they have tolls on a highway, my question is why do they have a toll on a highway or a parkway? Why would they need that? They're collecting taxes, road tax, and that should be more than enough to be paying for whatever activity is going on that highway, okay? And that's done through the fuel. So everybody pays it. And then if it's a highway and truckers are on it, they're paying a huge amount of money because they pay it in their fuel, okay? And I would imagine a bridge is the same way. I know here in New York when they did the thruway, the Deegan Expressway, what's it called now? It's 80...
87. It's the New York State Thruway.
New York State Thruway. When they first built that New York State Thruway, and they put tolls on it, and they claimed, well, we're going to put tolls on it to cover the cost for the construction beyond so many years. 40 years later, literally, the tolls are still on it. What's that all about? Well, they're making money. Someone's making money.
Well, they paid the debt off, but they extended it for one reason or another. They made an excuse to why
that's not awful to begin with. We're already paid for that. Look, they got a lot of traffic going on there, and every truck that's on there moving, they could put counters on these things to maybe make a better device you know, how to divide the money between this highway.
Well, when they apply for if it's not a tax-free, if it's just an out-and-out bond or grant, but when they have to pay money back, if they borrowed money that they have to pay back to pay for the road, then they make a law that says
maybe
that they
have borrowed the money, number one, and maybe they should wait until the, of course, and I don't think that happened. I think they were allotted money from the legislators, okay, because that's part of the job is to maintain, you know, the ability to.
What I'm trying to get out is I think that they go ahead to try to make it legal by applying that toll to this bill, let's say.
And I don't see how it makes it legal to the person.
You're a user of the road, and this
I'm paying my gas. I'm paying for taxes and gas. Most of the money you pay in gas is tax.
Yeah, but there's a federal tax, there's a state tax. I don't know.
Yeah, there's plenty of taxes.
If they're not collecting enough money, what are they going to do? Raise the gas tax?
Raise the tax on the fuel?
The whole state?
First of all, is they can put counters on these things if they have to divide in such a way because they're arguing, hey, we can't pay. First of all, they shouldn't have to pay anything back because the money goes back to ultimately the controller who divides the money and works all that anyway. You got a county controller and you got the state controller, and all of that is worked out and funneled out, and everything is paid, whatever is legislated and funded. I mean, there it is, and they want to collect it back. That's fine. They do it. And they got to maintenance it. They do it through tax on fuel.
Wasn't that some of the biggest bitches of our forefathers? They used to fight the toll roads, right? Wasn't this a very early thing in the United States where they were fighting certain tolls?
Yeah, I don't know.
During the before the American Revolution.
Yeah, I don't know. But I
those tolls went to the king back then, but. I mean,
the people are being double taxed. That's the bottom line.
They've been around for a long, long time. Tolls.
Let's move on. You've got a couple other people left in the queue here, and
yeah, we gotta go. But
you have a final point, Marianne?
Yeah. Well, my final point on this is I was going to see about scheduling a hearing and just basically tell them that they're working under color of law, and I was not. I mean, because they hunted me down.
Well, I definitely should respond to them, okay? And you got to think about what your strategy would be, and it's got to be a winning strategy. You know what I just spoke about? It's not gonna go well with them.
I want to say the other thing that has happened is.
How much is it? Is it really worth the battle?
I told you $20 in tolls, times $8 plus whatever else they're gonna do.
Well, right now it's under 100.
Yeah.
But the tolls themselves were only like.
Yeah, well, you're paying the penalties now. You're not going to get out of it.
Hold it. I've been involved with this on helping other people on this with a problem with the tolls, and it's just they go crazy with the amount of money they want, and the toll was only, you know, a few dollars, and they're up to like $80, $100 or whatever the case may be, and so if you call them up and say, hey, this is highway robbery, this is illegal. You can't be doing this. They're already set up to give you the low number. So you could write them a letter and say, I'm willing to pay the toll. How much is the actual toll?
I think the tolls altogether are less than $15.
Okay. Well, write them a letter, send them a check, say, here's what you got. Leave me alone now. I'm not paying anymore. Everything else is usury. You want to take my $15 and put it at $100? That's usury.
You know, they've put up...
Private company that collects that, too, by the way, I think. Pretty sure it is.
Yeah, they do use private companies. Depends on the state you're in.
That's what another thing I wanted to point out was that the office... There's the Violation Enforcement Services is in Horseheads, New York. The CSTROF 47, whatever that is, company, whatever, Oaks, Pennsylvania, and then there was another address that's online that shows that they are in Illinois. So, and none of this is in Springfield. So it's,
yeah, so they're government contractors is what it is.
Yeah, so are they working under color of law? I mean, what is this?
You're getting, I don't know. I just wanted to get my point out is that over here in the Northeast, they put up, like, let's say, cameras for speeding and stop signs and stuff. Somebody took it to court, and they said it's unconstitutional. Mm-hmm. Now, what they'll do is they'll try to get the picture of your face driving the car, because basically they don't know it was you driving that car. How do you know it was you? Unless they get a good photograph of you, you know? So there's a problem there with them sending out kind of like an anonymous ticket to an anonymous driver that has a constitutional problem. And so in New York, what they said was, at first they said, oh, we're going to just have the camera for work zones, which, you know, they're going to extend it all the way up and down the thruway, and they'd be handing out speeding tickets regardless.
Hey, Gerard, I got to leave. We got two other callers in the.
Okay, yeah, it's late. It's like after.
And, we did start a little late anyway, so maybe you could take those two callers.
What was I going to say? So it's been declared. So what happens is, what the state does is they mail you this ticket, and they tell you if you pay it, if you just pay it and you don't fight it, there'll be no points on your license. But if you fight it and you go to court, they're going to add it on your license besides. So you see, that's the extortion that they do. And I don't know if this ticket's the same way, but they may pull that. Well, if you fight it, we're going to add it. Well, it's a toll, though. It's not a moving violation. So I don't know how they could put it on your license. You know what I'm saying?
Well, because this one was that it's a liability, and they'll report it to credit agencies.
Right, so then you'll have some credit agency chasing you around.
Right, so basically they're you know, our social credit score.
I don't know. Maybe you should pay the original toll under protest and say, prove it was me. But anyway, we got to get going. I got two people and we're all overdone.
God bless you. Thank you, George.
Yep, thanks. Yeah. Okay, John, you're on.
Hey, John from Michigan. How's it going?
How you doing?
Good. Hey, we were just talking about the bonds. And I got a copy of the bond from the Kalamazoo, the county I'm in Michigan here. It's a blanket faithful performance bond for all the employees elected and appointed in the county.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the risk management authority for the state. But it's $1 million, and it's interesting because it's $1 million in lawful money of the United States of America, and lawful money is defined in the U.S. Code as gold or silver coin of the United States. So it'd be interesting to hook them up on that one. So
I love it. You'll go breaking the law just to get them to pay you lawful money.
Yeah, well, but it's interesting. There's lawful money of the United States of America, and I'm not sure if that's. I know, you know, United States of America, U.S. of A. All those are different entities. You know, it'd be interesting. But in U.S. code, I know on the old Federal Reserve notes it said, you know, it's payable. It's not. It was legal tender and it's redeemable in lawful money at any Federal Reserve bank. That was what the old one said. And then if you look up the definition of lawful money, that's what it said. It was lawful money or lawful money that the United States is defined as gold or silver coin of the United States, which, you know, I haven't seen any for, I guess I've seen silver dollars way back when, but that's all.
That's an interesting thing to get into, you know what I mean? If they didn't change the definition of lawful money to mean a fiat dollar, that's pretty interesting.
Right. But that's it's interesting. But it was the state risk management authority, and for $1 million for every employees elected and appointed officials of the county, and it's for $1 million. So it was interesting. I got that last year, and was from the head of the board of commissioners for this county. So I mean, I talked to him, and he said, "Sam sent it to me," so it's no big deal.
Hmm. Interesting.
But. Hey, I just thought I'd mention that. You know, you got one more person in the queue, and I got to go to bed too. So,
yep. But thank you for that. Yep.
You bet. Thanks.
Yep. Okay. Anthony from, I guess, West Virginia.
Anthony, how you doing?
Good.
Yeah, I just tuned in on those tolls. You know, that's that. You know, when the San Francisco Golden Gate Bridge was built, the entire people, the entire population of Marin County put up their homes for the bridge money. Everybody. And then there was supposed to be a certain amount of time when the bill was paid that nobody would have to pay a toll anymore. Yeah. And now they started by, now we got to put in ferry boats. You know, so they put in ferry boats. So now they got the Golden Gate Bridge Authority, and now they're collecting, I think it cost almost $8 one way, or $8 one way, you get to go the other way free, I think now. It might be even more than that.
Right.
And these tolls are with us forever, man, unless we can do something to take them down. And most of these tolls, I know that, I don't know who owns the Golden Gate Bridge Authority right now. Who knows, it might have gone to some, some other
probably
country.
China.
You know, like, the toll roads in Texas are being collected by some consortium in France, I think. The money doesn't stay in the United States. It's like it's all laundered somewhere else. And it's owned through these fictitious companies that are billing the United States now because somehow they have the maintenance contract for the roads, so they get to collect the toll or something. It's all so convoluted.
But if you want to go down a rabbit hole, I think you can Google it. Google Mike Gill, New Hampshire. And what he says is they launder money through LLCs. There's hundreds and hundreds of LLCs. This is what Biden did and his son. They got all these LLCs to hide money. And exactly what you're talking about, they launder it, basically. It goes in, and then it gets split up, and it gets sent to another company and another shell corporation and all this stuff. It's the way that they launder money. And they can't help themselves. When this thing finally comes to revelation, we're going to have to go through and go after all those LLCs and shut them down and take all their money, all the money that they've accumulated that they got in bank accounts.
That's how
we're going to pay our national debt.
We put that money back in our, we pay it our national debt off with that money.
There
we
you
put
go.
It back
that's
into,
exactly
into,
what
happens. Into our coffers. They're traitors. They're criminals. They stole the money from us.
Yep, absolutely.
And, we just got to take care of it that way. But
yeah.
I keep directing people to National Liberty Alliance. Almost every day, I'll write some sort of a post. I've got two accounts on Gab. They're separate accounts. They're both in my name, but with different addresses, basically. And it's legal to do that. There's no problem having two accounts. One's a business account. The other one's my regular personal account. And every day I'm putting something up there as a post. But then I'm also mentioning National Liberty Alliance in messages, like when I make a comment on something else.
Uh-huh.
So hopefully people are just getting curious. And if we had more people doing stuff like that all over, with Facebook and Twitter. I don't do Twitter anymore. I have friends on Facebook, but I don't go out of my way. I don't do LinkedIn, although I have an account for LinkedIn. I never use it. But if we had people just doing that, for a few minutes a day and have had 14,000 people doing that for, 11,000 people doing that just a few minutes a day, I mean, that word of mouth advertising is the best advertising you can buy.
Listen, you took the words out of my mouth, what you're saying right now, because the woman that was on before, some people are afraid to join because they don't want to be subversive and all this. Listen, if you just come in and listen and then copy and paste some of the articles, some of the even the audio to this meeting, send it to somebody. That would do a lot to support us. Just spreading the word is a big deal. You know what I mean?
That's it.
And I agree 100%. And if you're just coming in and you're copy and pasting, what do you think they're going to get you for? You know what I mean? It's like, what did you do? Oh, I filed papers in a court. You know, I mean, you're not even doing that. You're just passing information. And everybody's sick, very sick of all the censorship that's going on. I think all that stuff is about ready to end because people have had enough. So we'll see. I think we're coming to a head on all this stuff. But, you know, once it gets revealed and once they reveal all the snakes that we have in our government, it's going to be up to we the people to take them out. The government's not going to do the job. First of all, the government is the problem. You think they're going to punish themselves? Bad, slap their hand? No, no, no. It's up to us to take them out. And that's where our common law county grand juries are going to have to do a lot of work on the local level because they're right down into the town and the counties, you know, and we the people have to do that. You can't wait for the army to come in and say, they're not going to come in and save us. I'm sorry. It's not going to happen.
The Deus Machina, they call it in theater, you know, the God machine comes down to save the day. You know, they used to have the Commedia dell'arte back in Italy, and the characters would stay in character when they were off the stage, and they would be their character just in the community. And then all of a sudden, while they were doing the play, a lot of it was ad hoc, ad lib, and they would ad lib their way into something that couldn't possibly get out of. So then the God machine comes down and just saves the day. You know, and that's the Calvary coming, you know.
Right.
The Calvary. The Calvary is the Deus Machina in a theater or a film type of an environment. But are you familiar with what's going on in Germany right now, what the farmers are doing in Germany with their tractors?
What are they doing with their tractors? I hadn't heard this.
They are driving their tractors into, Berlin. They're just hundreds of tractors driving into Berlin because they're opposing something that is going through the legislature for the farmers there, and I think it might have something to do with electric-powered tractors. And
well,
so they're not standing up for it, you know. And I remember our founding fathers just reading about them. They would be talking amongst each other, and all of a sudden somebody would suggest something, and somebody else would say, oh, the people won't go for that. The people won't go for that. We got to get to that place where we're the people that won't go for that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they've been hammering the farmers terribly, and even over like in New Zealand and that, they've taken their farms away because they didn't do their nitrogen credits right or some such crap. They've used it to seize their farms and all this
global. That's all they wanted anyway.
That's
they want to
right.
take the land away.
Right. So look, people have to rise up to prevent that, and that's the only way it's going to stop.
They want all of our property. They want every bit of our property.
Well, I don't think that Bill Gates should be buying. We should even allow him to own farmland, that SOB. I mean, he owns thousands and thousands of acres out west now. You know, what's he going to do with it, you know?
They're criminals. They
yeah,
need to be prosecuted.
That. Yeah.
Yeah. I think, you know, I'm praying to see what Americans are going to do to rise to the occasion because we always do. And I'm just waiting to see what that's going to look like.
It won't be much longer, I don't think, because I think the banks are going to go down, the money's going to go down, and that's going to be the catalyst that starts the whole ball rolling. So, anyway, it won't be pretty.
I just wanted to check in a little bit with you tonight. And, Gerard, I'll see you next week. We'll talk maybe, or I'll be listening if nothing
okay.
else.
Thanks a lot. Thank you, everybody, for your participation.
Have a great evening.
Yeah.
Merry Christmas.
Yeah, Merry Christmas. It was a good meeting. Bye-bye. Thank you, guys. God bless. And we'll
God
see.
Bless you.
Well, we won't be here next week, I guess, right?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we're not going to be here for
Christmas.
Are
we going to be gone for 2 weeks or just next week we won't?
2 weeks, I believe John said.
Yeah, 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
I hear that. Well, I'll be checking in anyway.
Yeah, okay.
Doing some stuff, you know. Always got to be busy.
Yeah. Okay, very
happy
good.
Happy New Year. God
yeah,
bless.
Happy New Year, too. Who knows where we'll be, but when we get back, it could be some major changes. It's going to be interesting to see.
Maybe, yes. Maybe I'm looking forward to seeing what that's going to be.
A very nice Christmas present. I don't know. Hopefully it's not World War III, but okay.
Yeah.
All right. Have a good night.
Good night. Bye-bye.